Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio. I'm James Spencer.
I'm Steve Wilkes.
And this is our special holiday edition Brewing Nightmare show.
Ho, ho, ho.
Don't say that too much. We'll wind up like Don Imus.
That's right. No, I'm not even going to go there.
We're sipping on a beer.
This is a nice little holiday beer.
Yeah, it's one that's been in my basement since May, and it's from Trevor in Dayton, Ohio. He says it's a Christmas ale that he calls Festivus Feats of Strength.
It's a miracle. It's a Christmas miracle.
It's a Festivus for the rest of us. He says it's an extract plus grain brew with spices. It's fairly malty and is best served cellar temp to get all the spice notes. It's a little cool now. It'll warm up as we talk.
No, mine won't last that long. Yours might warm up. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Ooh. So happy holidays.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Ooh, that is good. He says if he remembered, of course this is back in May. He says, if I remember when I get home, I'll put the recipe up on basicbrewing.com. So we'll have to see if Trevor remembered. And I have to send him an email and let him know that he should listen to this show so that he knows that his beer is recognized as being good. Well, we had a good response from folks out there who have had disasters and want to share them.
It's a little scary how many disasters there are.
Well, some of them are literally a little scary. One of them had a picture that was really scary, and we'll get to that later on.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're new to home brewing or would like to get into home brewing, maybe you should skip this show. Well, because you know it's going to be nothing but accidents. This whole show, and I don't want to discourage people from getting into brewing, thinking that this is going to happen all the time. But you know, these are the exceptions to the rule.
These are the pitfalls.
Yeah, yeah, and we who you know have been brewing for a while, maybe we can learn from other people's mistakes.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I would think,
and have a little fun along the way.
Well, yeah.
So I appreciate your joining me.
Oh, well, I couldn't think of anything I'd rather do on a frosty night in December.
Than drink beer and talk about
beer and talk about
and talk about drinking beer.
Problems.
I'll start. How
okay.
about that?
All right.
And we've also been warming up. We split a Sierra Nevada Bigfoot barley wine from last year, 2007.
That was very nice.
Yeah, very hoppy still. And I've still got a six pack down there, so it'll be interesting to see.
From that year?
From that year. And I'm looking for this year's. I haven't seen it yet. Anyway, Eric from Lincoln, Nebraska says, my wife and I are expecting our first baby in December. Congratulations, Eric. Maybe it's December. Maybe it's already happened.
Yeah.
And so we spent much of this last summer rummaging through garage sales looking for baby items. My wife would get the shopping high, but I found it quite draining. Hoping to cheer me up, she came to me with the garage sale ads one Saturday morning and pointed out that one of them was advertising home brewing. I expected to find a Mr. Beer kit, but it turned out to be the estate sale of a guy who was apparently very serious about brewing. I picked up the following items for a total of $30.
Oh, no, this is going to make me ill, isn't it?
Okay, for $30. A 10-gallon stainless steel Polarware pot with spigot, pickup tube, false bottom, and a screw-in thermometer. Huh. An all-copper counterflow chiller. An oxygenator aeration system. A mash paddle. And 11 cases of bottles.
Jeez Louise.
For $30.
Wow.
So if we stopped right now, this would be a good story.
Yeah.
Eric says, this was a huge upgrade for my system, which used to rely on an 8-gallon turkey fryer pot, no spigot, a Zap-App-style Louderton, and a tub of ice for cooling. Eager to break in my new equipment, I brewed a milk stout the next weekend. I wanted to use the new pot as a mash tun, but when I went to sparge, it quickly clogged. The pickup tube had become disconnected. After creating a big mess, I eventually ended up moving the mash into my old louder tun. I ended up using the new pot for the boil, too, since it had the spigot, which would lead to my new chiller. Then at the end of the boil, I set up the chiller and turned on the hose. The flow of water caused the chiller to fall off the table, which resulted in a crack in the inner copper tube. The leak was huge, and I wasn't about to let all that hose water get into my wort.
Oh, no.
Once again, I had to get back to my old method. I didn't have any ice on hand, so I had to drive to a gas station to buy some.
Uh-huh.
I filled up a tub of ice for cooling, but then I realized that submerging the pot would probably break the screw-in thermometer. I tried in vain to safely remove the thermometer. Eventually, I ended up boiling water in my old pot in order to sanitize it. Then I transferred the wort and cooled it the old-fashioned way with the ice. I was afraid that the hour which passed between the end of the boil and the start of the cooling would result in an infection or a lot of DMS, but the beer turned out fine. Eric says it's a good thing I wasn't brewing something hoppy, as I probably would have lost all the flavor and aroma. The milk stout was well received as a party favor at the baby shower, and it took a blue ribbon at a local competition. All the same, it was a very long and frustrating day working with my new haunted brewing gear.
Oh, no.
So, you know, you get what you pay for, I guess.
Well, you do get what you pay for.
It's kind of like the story, the old story of the Corvette that was for sale for like $500, but it, you know, but people died in it and it smelled so bad that you couldn't do anything with it.
I don't know this story.
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
This guy wanted to buy a Corvette and it was for $500 and people died in it and it stunk up and they, anyway. So anyway, you get $30. You get a lot of stuff for $30, but it's haunted. So there you go.
Well, let me tell you what happened to Corey.
Okay. I'll let you.
Corey is from Champaign, Illinois. One of the capitals of homebrewing disasters.
Is that true?
Well, I don't know. I just made it up. But Corey writes, last Lenten season.
Mm-hmm.
He gave up beer for Lent. Now, that's his first problem.
Yeah.
See, God doesn't like this. I can tell you. Crazy, but I did it, he writes. During which time, since I gave up consuming beer, I thought if I can't drink it, I should brew it. Well, that's, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. God'll go along with that. So.
The voice of God.
I'm the voice of God. What do you want from me? I'm the voice of God. So I went about getting the equipment and starting my first homebrew. I researched a little and read about it a bit. That was my problem. My first batch was designated Funk You Ale.
Funk, with an N.
Yes, with an N. FCC. Funk You Ale. Because once my wife and friends tasted it, I told them the second drink was better, and this is what they said in response.
They said, Funk You? I'm not taking a second
funk
drink of
you,
that.
That's some ale. But obviously, not so much the kid-friendly response, Corey writes. You'll be happy to know that I joined a local brew club, the name of which is Buzz, which stands for, and I'm going to try this.
Okay.
Boneyard Union of Zymurgical Zealots.
That's pretty close.
It's good. I've learned a lot since then and have been improving on my brewing skills with partial mashes. Anyway, I thought I'd share this with this little tidbit with you.
Well, there you go.
Thank you, Corey.
Funk you.
Funk you anyway.
Maybe that's the next shirt.
Well, that's where my degree is from.
Funk you.
Funk you.
What's the matter, you?
What's the matter, you?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Corey. And you see, sometimes it's good to make a mistake right off, and that way you got nowhere to go but up.
Well, <it's, laughs> I've been saying that for 30 years.
I got another letter from another Eric from Thief River Falls, Minnesota. Eric says, my homebrewing blunder story comes from my very first two batches of beer. See? 7 months ago, some coworkers of mine that had already been homebrewing for years got me into this great hobby. I ordered an equipment kit from Northern Brewer, who they also sell our DVDs, by the way, and at the same time ordered two extract ingredient kits, a Belgian wit, and a dry Irish stout. Upon receiving the shipment, I removed both Y-yeast activator packets from the recipe kits and threw them in the fridge. A few weeks later, when I finally found the time to brew my first batch, I decided to brew the Belgian wit first. Several hours before I performed the boil, I randomly removed one of the Y yeast packs from the fridge and activated it, not realizing the yeasts were different strains intended to be used for a particular style of beer. Eric says everything went smoothly with the first batch of beer, the Belgian Wit, and it ended up tasting great. With a heightened sense of confidence, I decided to brew the dry Irish stout a few weeks later. On brewing day, I removed the remaining Y yeast packet from the fridge and happened to notice it said Belgian Wit on the package. After a brief period of confusion, it finally dawned on me that I had used the yeast intended for the stout when I pitched the Belgian Wit. Despite this, I decided to use the Belgian Wit yeast on my stout batch. The stout turned out all right, quotation marks, but not nearly as good as the Belgian Wit turned out. The stout had a kind of a sweet taste and a subtle odor I would not associate with a stout. But I bet I bet that odor would go all right with the,
right.
with the Belgian Wit. Eric says, I am unsure if the wrong yeast strain contributed to these problems, but I will definitely be more careful in the future to use the intended yeast packet. So there you go. Yes, I'm sure it has something to do with the yeast packet. So Eric did a little experiment.
They did.
There, accidentally.
And
came out with...
something that was all right.
All right, but not great.
But not great.
So there you go. Another lesson learned. Read your yeast packet.
Yeah. So, from Keith, who lives north of our U.S. line.
Oh.
In Canada, British Columbia.
Well, there you go.
Keith writes that in our first house, we had a second kitchen in the basement.
How lucky.
Yeah, I'm kidding. I have a crawl space in the basement with a little bitty kitchen. It's just not very usable. It had a sink and small four-burner gas stove that fit the brew pot perfectly, a fridge, and an IKEA-made pantry equipped with a heater and thermostat that made a great fermentation closet. It was a great place to brew, and I was whipping up five-gallon batches.
Yeah.
Way to go, Keith. After one long brew day, I had just put a well-shaken carboy of fresh wort into the fermentation closet to join two other slowly bubbling carboys from previous batches. My partner Marilyn was watching from the kitchen doorway and asked, "Do you think that shelf will hold three carboys?"
Now, is this what they call foreshadowing?
This is foreshadowing. If you've ever taken a writing course,
a creative
in college,
writing course, yes.
This is foreshadowing. And I haven't read this. I can't wait to hear how it comes out.
Do you think that shelf will hold those three carboys? Gee, I hope a train doesn't come.
Before I could answer, I discovered the IKEA is Swedish for particle board. Okay, now I'm crying. And the shelf gave way, and all three carboys came crashing down the three-foot drop to the floor. One carboy survived, but two shattered. I can't believe one made it.
Oh, yeah.
And two shattered, leaving me standing barefoot in 10 gallons of beer, surrounded by shards of glass. See, this is Dante's hell. This is the eighth level of hell.
It's like Tantalus. Are you familiar with the story of Tantalus?
No.
Tantalus is the guy in the myth. It's where the word tantalize comes from, because he's like standing up to his waist in water,
right.
and he's got grapes above him, and so every time he reaches to get a grape, the grapes go out of his reach, and every time he leans down to get a drink of water, the water drains out, and he can't get... He's standing in beer, can't do anything about
it. Surrounded by shards of glass.
Yeah.
Keith writes, "I was in shock." I bet. I couldn't move as brain was trying to figure a way to rescue the beer.
There's a word missing there. My brain, maybe.
There is a word missing. No, I don't think so. It's just his writing style.
Okay.
As brain was trying to figure a way to rescue the beer, but at the same time, knowing it was impossible, I felt hopeless as Charlton Heston at the end of Planet of the Apes.
Damn you.
Damn you.
You blew it all to hell.
Marilyn, however, sprung into action and raced out into the garage to get the wet, dry shop vac. A full 5 minutes passed, and I hadn't moved from the spot. What jolted me out of my state was watching Marilyn frantically vacuuming up the spilled beer from the kitchen floor and the shop vac behind her spraying beer foam out the top into the next room. I had to laugh. I can commiserate. A little hot tub defoamer in the vacuum.
Yes, thank goodness for the hot tub defoamer.
Thank God they had a hot tub. And we were able to clean up all the beer and were able to pick up all the glass without injury. The next
thank goodness for that.
Task was to clean the floor with bleach and build a fermentation closet with solid wood.
There you go.
So there you go. Now this
you have a similar story.
A similar story happened to me, a similar thing. It wasn't a beer episode, though, but our kitchen sink backed up, and we didn't know that, and we continued to run the dishwasher. So the dishwasher was backing up with kitchen sink water and dish water, and we came in, and there's water kind of pouring out the front of the dishwasher. So I said, let's get the shop vac.
There you go.
And I'm sucking it up, and I couldn't hear my wife screaming at me.
Because the shop vac was on.
Because the shop vac was on, and I was like, I'm getting rid of all this water. It was spraying all over the kitchen. We have a great room house, so the ceilings are very high. It was literally spraying the ceilings about 10, 12 feet high. I thought my wife was going to die. But she didn't. Thank God. So, Keith, I feel your pain. And I felt your pain.
I can just see the shop vac spraying.
Oh, I love shop vac stories. Is there anything better than a good shop vac story?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. Sean from Portland, Oregon. And it's spelled S-E-A-N. And every time I see Sean spelled that way, I have to think of there was this girl named Mimi in seventh grade in English class. And she did I'm digressing a little bit, but she did a book report on, I think the book was called My Darling, My Hamburger or something like that. And one of the main characters' names was Sean, but it was spelled S-E-A-N. So she spent the whole book report saying, so scene, then scene did, you know, what scene did next. Anyway.
Yeah.
So thanks, scene, for sending in this story. Oh, but this is a scary one. Sean says, you asked for stories about worst brewing experiences. Mine involves a trip to the ER.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I was just getting back into brewing a couple of years ago after a hiatus of several years. My friend and I were getting ready to brew a batch of ale, and I was sanitizing a glass carboy. I had filled the carboy with water in the sink and then lifted it up to put it onto the counter. It slipped out of my hands, and without even thinking about it, my hands rushed to catch it.
Ooh.
It shattered into large shards and thousands of tiny shards, and my arm impacted a large shard, and it was sliced really deep. Ooh. Luckily, my friend was there, and he rushed me to the hospital, and they stitched me up. It turns out that the emergency room doctor had homebrewed in the past.
So he understood cuts from carboys.
I guess. I don't know how that's relevant, but... So he knew how to fix homebrew accidents.
That's right.
Sean says, it's amazing how fast something like this can happen. I will never fill a carboy in the sink again, although I do still use glass carboys. I'm just extremely careful with them now. Each time I lift a full one, I tell myself that if it slips, just let it go and step back. I actually brewed that batch of beer the next day. I didn't want the experience to keep me from getting back into homebrewing. I consider it the most expensive batch of homebrew I'll ever brew. And that's a common thread, I think, in some of these stories. And Sean closes by saying, soon after this event, I switched to brewing all grain batches, and I've really enjoyed the hobby since then. So, there was a similar thread on Tech Talk about homebrew accidents. And carboys, glass carboys breaking, came up again and again and again on the thing. And you got to think, I mean, these things are heavy.
Yeah, they're heavy.
They're slippery.
Yep.
And they're full of, you know, liquid. And, you know, when they slosh around, they're kind of hard to control. So, you know, be very, very, very careful with those glass carboys because you never know.
I worry about it. We recently installed tile in... We call it the playroom, but it also holds my It's my brewing closet is there.
Right.
So ever since we did that, I've been really worried, I mean, really scared about carrying a carboy from, you know, my brew day, which I typically brew out on the back porch, and so it's an outdoor thing. And then, but I have to carry it in, and I'm just terrified that I'm going to slip on this tile. And actually, now I haven't broken a carboy, but I did spill or knock twice. I've knocked an empty bottle, an empty 12-ounce beer bottle onto the tile, and it's like a grenade going off.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, it's just taken, you know, it's like, oh geez, Louise, trying to clean that up because, you know, you can't.
And that's a place where you could walk around barefoot or
we do.
Stocking,
I mean,
feet.
We've got a little dog, you know, that's where his kennel's at. And, you know, so you just have to spend hours, you know, scrubbing and cleaning and making sure you've got every little shard up. So it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
And it's a good reason why you ought to buy one of those, getting back to carboys. Well, you ought to buy one of those little harness things that you can buy at your homebrew shop.
I think
shop.
They call it the brew hauler. That's the only brand I've seen out there. There may be others, but it's a little strappy thing that you can put on your carboy.
Right.
That'll help in the safety factor. You know, it'll give you something to hold on to.
Oh boy, there's nothing worse.
I hope there's something. I hope there's a cheerier
one.
And while you're reading that, I'm gonna go to the fridge and get another beer.
Well, good, because I'm out of...
Me too.
...what we just had to drink. Well, this is Kevin. Kevin's from Wake Forest, North Carolina. Yoo-hoo. I like the Carolinas. I love the Carolinas. They're beautiful. Kevin writes that he just brewed a pumpkin spice ale this past Sunday. And his email dates from November the 20th. So, pumpkin spice ale. It's a mini mash in a 3-gallon cooler with a stainless steel braid. He had heated a strike water and transferred it into the mash cooler, added his grains, then realized he had forgotten to install the braid. Not a good thing.
Won't do you much good there.
Won't do you much good. The only thing I could think of was to pour the mash into another cooler. After doing this, I installed the braid and poured the mash back into the mash cooler. Of course, by this time, my water temp dropped below the desired temperature of 154 degrees Fahrenheit, in parentheses. I boiled some water to increase the temperature, but there was not much room left in the cooler. Yeah. The temperature increased a bit to 149. After 60 minutes, I opened the valve to transfer it to the kettle. Nothing came out.
That's a bad feeling.
Oh, I hate that. Again, the only thing I could think of was to pour it into the other cooler. I did this and found the braid was missing.
Ugh.
I didn't clamp it into the copper pipe. I have not had... I've not had to clamp in the past. I installed another braid and poured the mash back into the mash cooler. Now everything drained properly. I continued my normal process of sparging the mash and added the DME to the kettle, dry malt extract. Aren't you proud of me that I knew that?
Yeah, well, that's good.
Thinking my extraction rate might be low, I grabbed a cupful of wort and put it in the fridge. Started my boil and checked the pre-boil gravity of the cup after it cooled. My calculated pre-boil gravity was 1.056, and my measured was 1.046. After a quick calculation, I added a half a pound of DME to the boil to bring up the gravity. The calculated SG was 1.064, and my measured SG was 1.067. I'm lost.
So you never know what you're going to get, really. I mean, it's not, you know.
So homebrewing is like a box of chocolates?
Well, it's all about life's like a box of chocolates. But the thing is not to get freaked out if you stray from your recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Just go with it.
Actually, that's the lesson that I gleaned from this when we pre-screened these. And I was reading.
The screening process was simple. Or was very difficult. If you sent one in, you get on the show.
You get on the show. But when I was reading this before we went on the air, I thought to myself, this is one of those don't worry, have a homebrew things. So it was a nightmare, but I'm sure the beer is good. The beer is he writes, the beer is currently fermenting. Hopefully I didn't have any HSA issues.
Hot side aeration.
There you go. And should know in a week or so, we'll let you know how it turns out.
And I think I heard from him. I think he said it was good.
You know, I had a feeling it would be good.
So, yeah. No, that reminds me of a stuck, back when I was first brewing all grain, I had one of those plastic false bottoms for my cylindrical cooler. And those things, if you don't install them right, they tend to float.
Oh.
So the grain would get underneath there and get stuck in the tubing and, you know.
Yeah.
After about the third time, I had to scoop out all the grain. I decided to go with a hose braid. But, yeah, that makes for a long, frustrating brew day.
Yep. That's how I made my old disaster. The brew I lovingly referred to as old disaster was a stuck sparge episode like that.
But it turned out great.
It was a great beer. It's one of the best I ever made.
It was an Amarillo ale. I remember it very well. By the way, Don from St. Paul, Minnesota, sent us some beers. We are now working on the, I just poured the one called Holiday Cheer.
Ooh.
And it's kind of a dark brown. It's kind of a little brown ale looking beer.
Oh, it's nice.
Mmm. Mmm. That's very tasty.
That's actually a very nice beer.
Very clean.
Mm-hmm.
A little spicy, maybe.
It's a little
hoppy.
A little hoppy, a little, maybe some clove in there, maybe a little cinnamon, not too much.
Just to think that was on my porch in a box just a few minutes ago.
Well, there you go.
It just, the timing was perfect, Don.
So you chilled us outdoors.
Well, Mother Nature chilled us outdoors.
But that's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
How well, organic of you.
Something. T. Christopher from Colorado Springs, Colorado.
My hometown.
Oh, there you go. You asked for bad brewing stories. Here's mine. My roommate had a bag of leftover limes that he asked if we could ferment.
I don't know.
Why not, this I thought.
Yeah.
You thought he was going to have a bag of something else.
But at least it wasn't a bag of leftover oysters. Let's ferment those and see what happens.
Why not? I had grains and yeast left over from an earlier project which hadn't gotten brewed. I went down to the aquarium store on the corner to get some RO, reverse osmosis water, to brew with since it is already pure. I've been doing this for a year or so, and the owner knows me. This time he was so busy, so he just waved me to the water supply room, and I grabbed the hose that was there and filled up my bucket. I'm sure you can see where this is going. That's more foreshadowing there.
Mm-hmm.
Later that week, I returned to the store for another bucket of water for another batch. The aquarium store owner saw me fill my bucket and asked why I was using salt water for my beer. Well, that goes well with lime.
Well, yeah.
Just put some tequila in there. Interesting. The limes fermented fairly well and had an interesting flavor, but oh my God, it was salty. We didn't measure the specific gravity, so we don't know how it turned out, but we guessed it was a very low alcohol content. And it tastes kind of like fish. So.
Oh. That
so,
can't be a good thing.
Yeah. Good quality water. That's the lesson from that one.
Oh, my goodness. Well, our friend Chad from Tuscumbia, Alabama.
Tuscumbia?
Tuscumbia.
I've never heard
of Tuscumbia. And I thought I've heard of every town in Alabama.
Well,
anyway, Tuscumbia, Alabama. Chad writes that on his first brew, he did a lot of research. He planned well. He read How to Brew and listened to several different podcasts.
Mm.
He writes that he was using a turkey frying pot. Well, what else if you're in Alabama? You're going to have a turkey fry pot,
of
right?
Of course.
Anywhere
like Arkansas.
South, it's like Arkansas.
Yeah, just don't burn down your deck.
That's right. I was using a turkey fry pot but could not find the lid. So I used a heavy glass lid from a skillet to bring the water to a boil. I was taking the lid off to add my extract and first hop addition and dropped the lid of my brand new Kenmore Pro Series glass top stove. Oh, my God. 2 exclamation points on this. Busted it and sent spider cracks all across it. I was able to finish my brew. Needless to say, the wife was none too thrilled, considering she hates beer anyway.
Oh.
So after a $250 replacement top, this is going to be the most expensive beer I ever made. I call it my Stovebuster Red Ale.
That's great. He's the one I heard back from that said that the beer turned out fine.
Stovebuster Red. That's a great. That's a great name of a beer.
Yeah.
And I can identify with that as well.
You have another.
Here's another.
These are just handpicked to go along with your life.
Well, you see, I was cooking a dinner for my wife, and I think it was like Valentine's Day or something. It was kind of special, and we were having lobster. And so I had these lobster shells left over, and I thought, well, I'm not going to waste these. I'm going to make lobster stock.
There you go.
To make, you know, a bisque or a soup of some kind later with. So I put this I put these shells in a little stock pot, but too small, and put the water in, and it boiled over. And the water got underneath the cook top of my, you know, glass top
right.
range.
Electric stove.
Yeah, and it went underneath, fried the whole damn thing out. There were sparks. You know, people were running screaming off the streets. It was a huge mess. And it cost me right at $250.
Well, there you go.
So,
and now there's a light that stays on, the little red light that's
little light
always
that says,
stays on. On your
the
stove.
Burner on the front left is always hot. It's not always hot, but the light's always there. And so we can threaten small children with that. just if we need to, you know, my grandkids.
Another helpful hint.
Another helpful hint.
Michael from Tunkhannock.
Oh, my goodness.
Pennsylvania.
Tunkhannock, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. We'll say that's what that is. Michael says, I made bread from beer yeast about a month ago.
So did we.
Yes, we did. Just about the same time your bread with beer yeast show came out. I brewed a pumpkin ale for Thanksgiving and saved some yeast after kegging, about 3 ounces. The bread recipe was a standard whole wheat recipe, but I added 1 cup of canned pumpkin and pumpkin spices that gave the bread a nice light orange color. Boy, that sounds good.
It does.
It made 2 loaves, and it was great. But here's the mistake I made. Sunday before Thanksgiving, my wife and I decided that since we host dinner for our families on Thanksgiving, that pumpkin bread would be a great addition to our annual pumpkin cheesecake and deep-fried turkey. See, they fry turkeys up in Pennsylvania, too.
Oh, sure.
So I got out the yeast I saved from whatever the last beer was. I made bread just as I had done previously, then decided to make a second batch so we wouldn't run out. But I had to use regular bread yeast for this batch, and I thought it would be interesting to try the two side by side. Well, the beer yeast bread wouldn't rise at all compared to the bread yeast. Oh, well, no matter. I gave it more time, but I couldn't wait any longer to bake them because the bread yeast batch was growing out of its bowl. Baking proceeded without a hitch, filling the house with a great yeast and pumpkin aroma. The bread yeast loaves looked more Norman Rockwell. So, quote unquote, so we cut into a beer yeast loaf, hot right out of the oven. So with a stick of butter and a knife, anxiously waiting, we ate our bread with a funny look on our faces. You know the one, just like after you drink spoiled milk. Boo. Well,
I know where this is going.
My wife pipes up and proclaims, oh, there's something in there I don't like.
Hops.
Before she spoke, I knew what it was. Hops.
Hops.
The bread with the beer yeast was as bitter as an IPA. Turns out the yeast I saved was from a Russian Imperial Stout. Yet another lesson learned. We are all thankful this Thanksgiving that I made the other loaves with bread yeast. I won't give up, though, says Michael, but I'll only save yeast from low-hopped beer right now. So there you go. We've had questions about, you know, can you make, you know, can you reuse your yeast from a batch of beer to make bread? Mm-hmm. And you sure can. Just, you might want to choose the beer wisely or do a little yeast wash in there to get the hoppy taste out.
Now, refresh my memory on this beer. This is a really nice beer.
You
don't have it handy?
If Don sent me the details, I can't find it. Mm. It just says Holiday Cheer.
Holiday Cheer. No matter. It's a very, very nice beer. It's real subtle. You know, even commercial, like famous winter beers or Christmas beers, they kind of, a lot of times there's too much going on for me. It's like.
It's like sucking on a wreath.
Yeah, yeah.
I've ever done that.
Well, yeah. But there's anything wrong with that.
No.
But this is very subtle and yet spicy.
I think these are homegrown hops, though.
Really?
Yeah. I think he said
that. Boy, that's great.
And pardon me, Don, I just, you know, it's late and I've had a couple of beers.
Well, this is...
I can't remember.
This is from our good friend Jason, who lives in Hiram, Utah. Hiram, Utah. And this is actually a cider story.
Okay.
So...
we'll take those two.
We'll take those two. I have a brewing blunder I would like to share, he says. He writes, I recently started 35 gallons of hard apple cider.
Wow. Wow.
That's a lot of... while I was buying my yeast, I was talking to the local homebrew shop owner about my project. While we were talking, he gave me his recipe and process. He told me that he treats his cider like a beer instead of like a wine. A two-week primary and a one-week secondary, then bottle the initial 5 gallons with an additional 2 gallons of fresh cider for priming.
So he's saying for 35 gallons of cider, add 2 gallons of fresh unfermented cider to prime, is what this guy's advice was.
I would say yes, except
or maybe
not
the,
sure.
Okay, except, well, go ahead. I will eat a bourbon ball.
You eat a bourbon ball while I
while you work.
While I think here, a 2 week primary. I've already said this, but to recap, a 2 week primary and a 1 week secondary. Then bottle the initial 5 gallons. Okay,
oh.
So the initial 5 gallons out of the 35 gallon batch with an additional 2 gallons of fresh cider for priming. So I thought I would try it.
So he's bottling 5 gallons
with 2 gallons
of fermented cider with 2 gallons.
Of fresh cider. As his priming agent.
Wow, that's a lot of sugar.
That's what I'm thinking. Can we say foreshadow? I mean, we might be wrong here, but I'm getting a strong foreboding. So I thought I would try it. I got up early on Saturday and started washing and sanitizing 75 bottles.
Mm.
Ooh, that's a bunch of work. And then racked my cider into the bottling bucket. I added 2 gallons of fresh sweet cider and started bottling 75 bottles. Okay, I'll be honest. I and my wife couldn't keep out of the stuff and ended up with 68 bottles.
So that may have entered into
it. Oh, had some of the issues. I finished at around 10 a.m. and brought one to my father around 5 p.m. By that time, the cider had already started carbonating, which made me nervous.
Oh, my.
Well, 2 days went by, and I decided it was time for a bottle. I brought two up and put them in the fridge, and when I opened one, it sprayed all over the kitchen. It sprayed all over the kitchen, and my unsuspecting wife. Not good. In all caps.
It's like a NASCAR celebration.
Yeah, no kidding. Without the intellectual...
Now.
Just kidding. Just kidding. I thought I was surely headed for bottle bombs, so I headed down to the crawl space and began burping all 68 bottles. This is killing me. I burped each bottle around 10 times.
They must be Grolsch bottles.
They got to be. I don't know. I burped each bottle around 10 times, each time lifting on the cap just a little to release the pressure, and then back down to seal well. Needless to say, I didn't trust these bottle bombs any longer, so I brought them upstairs, cleaned and sanitized the carboy. Then my wife and I started ripping tops off of each geyser and pouring it into the carboy. It was a mess. I bet. And we were swimming in cider, and our clothing was soaked, but we were laughing and thought the whole throughout the whole process. Out of 7 gallons of cider, we ended up with just less than 5 gallons.
Mm.
Moral of the story, sometimes it's best to let things go to dryness before you put the cap on.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
There you go. And even huge messes in the kitchen can be fun if you and your friend are in the right mindset and you drink enough.
There you go.
P.S. The cider is happily fermenting in the crawl space. Once again, no more risk of detonation. That's a great story. It sounds like a Woody Allen film.
It's good. Well, it's good to have an understanding significant other.
You're not kidding.
Can you imagine cider spraying everywhere?
No.
Every time they open up a
bottle?
Well,
I can imagine it, but it would probably cost me about $35,000 because that's what it would take to remodel the kitchen.
Jack from Wynyard, Tasmania.
Good day, mate.
He says, pronounced Tasmania. Oh, he changed the S for a Z. I was like, that's not much help to spell it the same way as it's... Oh, okay. Jack says, I'm up to brew 404.
Woo.
Since I began keeping records in 1985. Wow. And fortunately, only have a couple of stories that would make it into the horror section. So he's doing good.
No kidding.
Well, Jack says, I was telling this guy I worked with how wonderful homebrewing was and how good mine was, and finally talked him into coming around for a barbecue one Sunday and having a few drinks. I used to bottle it in 26-ounce, that's 75 milliliter, bottles, and he was very impressed with the first couple of glasses we had, and as we were just finishing the last sip from the next bottle, we both noticed a few floaties in our glasses.
Oh.
Foreshadowing. On a closer look, it revealed bits of body and legs of a rather large spider that must have crawled into the bottle before the brew was put in. We both felt pretty unsettled in the stomach after that.
I bet.
And it took my friend about another 6 months to have any more of my brews. He must have thought the beer was good, though, because he eventually started brewing himself. So
that's great. I actually had this is a little.
Oh, I know.
I have a similar story, but it's a mammal that actually got trapped in a bottle. I didn't put beer in it. Beer never got in the bottle. But I was cleaning some bottles out, and then I had stored in my outbuilding in a shop that I have that's not in the house, and a mouse had crawled down in there and died.
Into a bottle.
And I was amazed that could happen.
Like Strange Brew.
Yeah.
With Bob and Doug McKenzie.
It wasn't very pleasant.
Yeah, there are lots of crickets in my basement. I have to check for cricket parts.
Justin from Portland, Oregon. A place where they brew a lot of good beer. Portland, Oregon. They do.
You've been there.
Here's a nightmare question for you.
Oh, a question.
In the midst of battle, I read the Werflock, which I've never... Werflock.
Werflock is it's basically Irish moss in tablet form.
Okay, so it's like a pelletized Irish moss.
It's like a pressed tablet of Irish moss.
Okay, he read the instructions wrong, incorrectly, and he added one tablet per 5 gallons for the last 15 minutes of the boil instead of one tablet for 5 gallons. Whoops.
So one tablet for each gallon.
Mm-hmm. Quit laughing. He writes.
He knows this so well.
I was doing a full wort boil and added 6 tablets. Is there any way this batch isn't ruined? Cheers.
Oh yeah, there was that question. That was a question, and I answered him. I emailed it back. I said, "Don't worry.
Don't worry."
I told him your story.
I've done the same thing.
You put a whole bag of Irish moss in the beer.
I dumped a bag in one time. And I went, well, that's really some clear beer. And there's a lot of stuff at the bottom.
thank goodness the Irish moss comes in small bags.
No kidding. I suppose it's a 1 ounce bag. You know, I mean, I never even...
Yeah, you're supposed to just like put a pinch.
Yeah, it just doesn't take much.
Like a teaspoon.
And I just didn't know what I was doing. That was a long time ago.
But the beer came out all right.
The beer was fine.
Slightly fishy tasting. But it's seaweed. Irish moss is seaweed.
Yeah.
David from Savannah, Georgia, says, so I thought I'd send one of my disaster stories. I'm sure you have plenty of dropped carboys, etc. So I'll recount a less traumatic episode. So I guess he had a... anyway, let me read. Let me set the scene, he says. It was Super Bowl Sunday of this year, and I'd planned on brewing a Dogfish Head Midas Touch clone early in the day. In case you haven't had Midas Touch or seen a recipe, it's effectively 1/3 beer, 1/3 mead, and 1/3 wine with malt, honey, and muscat wine concentrate. Things came up as you're watching the Super Bowl, And so I didn't get started until late. The game came on during the boil, so I was running back and forth between the game and the brew pot outside. Everything was going fine during the boil, and I even remembered to throw in my pinch of saffron for flavoring. I finished the boil and chilled the wort to pitching temperature. Being a good little brewer, I took my final gravity reading and saw that I was way under expected levels. I couldn't imagine my efficiencies were so low, but I couldn't figure out what had happened. Scratching my head, I finally realized I'd forgotten to add the honey while the wort was still at pasteurization temperatures. The honey is a third of the gravity, and the muscat concentrate doesn't go in until the end of active fermentation. I figured I could do one of three things. Pasteurize the honey separately and add it to the wort. Throw caution to the wind and just chuck the honey into the wort and hope for the best. Or, number three, relax, go back to the game and not even worry about it. I chose option three.
I like this guy.
And thus was born my SOB beer. In other words, Saffron Ordinary Bitter. Originally named Don't Ale. Complete with forehead slap, but changed later to avoid 5 gallons worth of self-inflicted headaches. It actually just took a first in competition as a spice/herb ale. I've still got the honey and the muscat juice to use in another batch. Maybe this time I'll actually pay attention and hit my gravity target. So sometimes
Mistakes
happen, and you're okay. Like we said before, you just got to know how to roll with the punches, and just keep on brewing and not worry about it.
That's a great story. But I have another one.
You have one more.
I have one more, and this is from Sean, who lives in Chicago, Illinois, the Windy City.
Did you spell it Seen?
I'm sorry, it's Shane.
Oh,
not Sean. The lighting in here is not the best. It's Shane. Shane from Chicago, Illinois.
Sorry about that, Shane. Shane.
He writes that he's only on his 25th batch. Only?
Well, that's good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Or so. 25th batch or so. And recently he bought an Erlenmeyer flask for making yeast starters. So that's a little like a scientific.
Yeah, in the bottom of it looks like an inverted cone, and then it's got a little cylinder on the top of it, sort of.
Yeah. So he's making his second starter. He writes, "I had wort coming to a boil on my stove when my probe thermometer in the flask, I could see that the temp was around 220 degrees Fahrenheit, but it wasn't boiling. I thought I'd give it a good stir to get the boil going. Since my big stir spoon was too big to get into the flask, I had the smart idea to give it a little shake." Uh-oh.
Yeah.
"I put on my silicone heat mitt that covers the fingers and picked up the flask and gave it a swirl. Ouch."
Mm.
In big, big letters.
Ouch indeed.
"It started bubbling all right." There should be an exclamation point there. Exclamation point. Up and out of the flask and all over my hand. Oh, my God. My fingers were saved by the silicone mitt, but the back of my hand was well poached. Needless to say, I won't be picking up my flask during the boil anymore. After more than a month, my hand is finally getting back to normal, and my double IPA is the best I've ever made. Wow. But as good as it is, I doubt I'll follow the exact steps in my last recipe." Yeah.
Okay.
So what we're looking to see.
Boil your hand.
Third-degree burns on your hand.
Yeah, scald your hand. Well, yeah.
Wow.
Well, and he sent me some links at the bottom of that email.
I saw that.
And I clicked on one of the links, and it came up with one of those photo sharing pages.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how sometimes the text loads, and it takes a couple seconds for the pictures to load. Well, the text on the page said, like, pictures from our wedding or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, Shane has sent me some pictures of, like, his IPA being served at his wedding or someone's wedding.
Right.
No. Up pops up almost like a full screen image of his hand with a big skin flap peeled off the back of it.
Jeez.
Holy smokes.
That's just not a good thing. I mean, I'll go to a lot of sacrifice for a beer.
But you won't necessarily take a picture of it.
Well, Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. So he had, so he posted like he had like a chronological like day by day. Here's how my hand healed, kind of a thing, which was kind of interesting from a
medical
point of view, physiological. So anyway, glad your hand is better, Shane.
Well, those are some great horror stories.
Well, we got more. We got two more.
We have two more. Okay. Well, and then of course I have my Halloween horror story.
And we have to hurry because
we're running out of time, so we must go quickly.
Okay. Mike from Grand Forks, North Dakota. I'm sending this about my worst brew day. I was being a little overzealous and trying to brew two batches at the same time. Oh, have you ever tried that?
No.
Oh, I've done that. My whole brew day was about 12 hours, which wasn't too bad, and everything in the brewing process went along without a hitch. I just pitched my yeast and was going to take the carboy 10 feet, foreshadowing, to this Four Seasons room we have to ferment. It was in the middle of winter in Grand Forks. Not even thinking about the fact that the wort was warmer than the outside 10 below temperature, I went out to put it in the Four Seasons room. I took about two steps outside, and I hear this loud pop. And I realized that my carboy was cracking along the bottom, so I started to set it down because my wort was leaking out all over the place. Just before I set it down, the bottom fell off. And I had five gallons of beer gushing all over the snow in the deck. I almost cried.
Yeah.
Needless to say, the other batch went to a different spot to ferment and turned out fine. I did have a beer ice rink in on the deck for the rest of the winter up there in Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Wow, that's a very interesting story.
Yeah, so you got warm. Yeah. Glass, especially thick glass, doesn't react to those temperature changes. I mean, the reason that the glass in the carafe in a coffee pot is so thin, it's because, you know, thin glass can handle those temperature changes better than the thick glass of carboy. Mm-hmm. So remember that. Okay, one more real quick. Got about 8 minutes left. And this save this for last, because this is like a triple whammy.
Oh, no.
Steven from Auburn Brew Club in Auburn, Alabama, said, I heard you mention on the past four podcasts that you need more brew catastrophes. Not like I was begging or anything. So we unintentionally decided to help you out this past weekend. I've been brewing for about 9 years, and I saw things this past Saturday that just totally made me cringe. The Auburn Brew Club is newly formed, August of this year. Congratulations, guys. And we decided to have our first big brew day. We totaled over 65 gallons at last count on the morning of Saturday, the 8th of December. Everything was set up, burners were going, and about 6 hours into the event, the problems started arising. The host, Scott, was borrowing a counterflow chiller, and for some reason the garden hose came undone from the attachment and couldn't be pulled back on. Luckily, we had Mike, a welder machinist on the site, who had tools to reattach the hose. Unfortunately, the fix didn't work correctly, and since Scott was cooling his wort into a better bottle, the second problem occurred. So we've heard problems with carboys now. A better bottle implosion happened. There was much profanity at this point, and Scott wondered if the beer god somehow did not like him anymore. He expected the wort to be cool coming out of the counterflow chiller. However, it was still boiling.
Wow.
And the heat shrunk the better bottle to one quarter of its original size. Basically turning it into a clear, wrinkly pumpkin. Meanwhile, others were drinking beer out of a chest milk fridge filled with about 8 corny kegs of homebrew, 1 Sankey keg of homebrew German Alt. The faucet on the Alt was opened up when the door closed at one point, dumping out 8 gallons of freshly brewed beer along with emptying a 10-pound tank of CO2. This was Mike's beer, so while he was helping Scott, his homebrew was emptying out in the bottom of his fridge. The end result is we are now voting on the Big Brew Catastrophe Award, and so far it appears the trophy will be the shrunken better bottle, and it will probably go to Mike for losing all that beer.
My goodness.
So there you go. Can you tell your Halloween story in like 5 minutes?
Oh, I can tell it in 30 seconds.
Okay.
So my wife is out of town, and she's got to... I mean, she's out of town at a conference, and it's I've got to take Chase, my son, trick-or-treating. Mm-hmm. But I've determined I'm going to brew some beer. And so I go through this brew day, And everything is perfect. I mean, I hit every mark. I mean, everything was exactly the water temperatures, the amount of word I needed, and all that just was perfect. And so I needed to feed him dinner. So I thought, well, I'll put the wort in to cool. You know, and I used an immersion chiller. And I thought, well, I'll put the immersion chiller in, and I'll let it do its thing. And we'll go up and get a sandwich at the little pizza shop down the street from us. By the time I get back, 45 minutes or so later, it'll be cool and I'll pitch. Then we'll go trick-or-treating. So I get home. It's dark by now. And I look at the brew pot with the immersion chiller in it, and it is overflowing.
Oh.
And what I did not know was that the immersion chiller, where the little, where the copper and the plastic tubing come together at the entrance to it, had a small leak.
A little clamp linked.
A little clamp leaked. Leak. Like a drip a second. Very small. But it ran right down the tubing, right into the brew pot. And I ruined a large batch of beer. And I was really angry about it because I'd worked very hard to make this happen, to get his costume together, to, you know, kind of, I was multitasking.
Right.
So then the next day, not willing to admit defeat, I went back to my local homebrew shop, the home brewery. I bought the same ingredients. I brewed again that night, and I had played. I'm a musician, and I played that night. I got off work at midnight. I started brewing at midnight. I brewed all night long, and somehow or another left too much sanitizer, I think, in the fermentation carboy. And when I tasted the initially fermented beer, it tasted like soap. And I don't think it was soap. I think it was my sanitizer.
Right.
I really, really thought hard about this. What did I do wrong? And I think I just didn't rinse something right. And so I ruined two batches of beers in 2 days. And the lesson here, of course, is don't try to do too damn much in one day.
There you go.
So those are my two horror stories. And they happen within 48 hours of each other.
On Halloween. So next year we should do the horror stories on Halloween.
Yes, we should.
Okay. Thank you, Steve, very much.
Thank you, James.
For helping out. And thanks to Trevor. And thanks to Don for the beers. We're going to drink more beers after this.
Yes, we are.
And thanks to you for listening. And thank you for the... Is there going to be another show before the end of... I can't look at the calendar. I don't know. I don't have a calendar. Is this the last show of...
You know, this might be.
Of the year?
Well,
so thanks to everybody for your support during 2007, unless there's another one.
Unless there's another one.
But anyway, even if there is another one, thanks for your support.
And we really look forward to... our friends sending us more beers in 2008.
Boy, that wasn't very... you're just a smooth guy.
I am.
Steve Wilkes. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. If you go to our site and go to basicbrewing.com for our information on all the stuff that I always say at the end of the show every time. Oh, and I got to say... the Amazon things for this week: modern hydronic heating for residential and light commercial buildings, (2E), and Lamaze Spin and Explore Garden Gym. Those are the two Amazon.
What does
things.
That mean?
I don't know. But thanks everybody for all your support.
Yep.
And thanks for listening. Thanks for your stories, everybody. And we'll see you next time. Happy brewing, everybody.
Happy brewing.